Well, the uniquenesses of Chalavakum compared to the other dinim of Mahoyakum that we've been looking at up until now is actually captured by placement in the Rambam. We've seen in the past, in different contexts, that because one of the Rambam's primary goals in writing the Mishneh Torah was to put everything into its logical place, so location, location, location is absolutely critical in understanding dinim. You want to see what the Rambam said, the Rambam left out, how the Rambam phrases things, and where he puts them. So it's striking that we just stepped back many, many, many prakim Machal Sasuris. We've been almost exclusively in the very last parak of Machal Sasuris and Parak Zayin throughout the year, throughout Tashrin Pei Gimel. So he talks about Pasakim, he talks about Bishul Akim, that's what he talks about Shechar Akim and drinking with Nachum, all in Parak Yud Zayin. Now we step back to Parak Gimel. That's because unlike Pas and Bishol and Shechar Akim, all which have been rooted in the world of Chasnas, according to most, if not all, Rishonim, the Gemara had said Beferish, the Pas and Pas is Mishum Chasnas, and most Rishonim assume the Bishol Mishum Chasnas, the Gemara had a Machlokas Amaram, we assume that Shechar is Mishum Chasnas. But the Chalav Akum is not Mishum Chasnas. It's not a concern that by drinking the Nachri's milk, is it that you're going to lead to socializing? We don't see milk as an important social vehicle. Milk is instead a concern of non-kosher ingredients. We had seen that some Rishonim and Rashi had raised that at one point. Maybe that's part of what's lurking behind the concern of Bishul Akum. Last Chabur, we saw the latter part of Kuf Yudala, the din of Darker Lassis Lasochan Yayin, and we looked at, or began to look at the concern of non-kosher ingredients, in Mashkin and in various foods that may have a wine additive. And here we dive into a formal Gezeirah D'Rabbanan, it sounds like, that is absolutely rooted in the concern of a non-kosher ingredient. It's interesting also that chalav is one of the macholos asuras which appears significantly both in mission number 2 and in mission number 3. Both in the mission Lavanim Beis that has items which are not asur bana but are macholos asuras, as well as in Lamates Lavanim Beis. In terms of the items that are Hetzer Gemur. It makes a significant appearance in both contexts, and you have a significant piece of Gemara in both contexts. The background, as the Rambam places it very clearly, is in a Din Daraisa, an Isar Daraisa. Gemara has several drushes for it, and the Rambam favors the extra word in the list of the ofos tameim. The Chumash has in more than one place a list of which are the kosher species of land animals. You have the list of behemos, tahoros, and chayos tahoros, both the list of the names, as well as the simane kashrus. You have the simane kashrus for seafood, that's the snapir v'kaskasas. And as far as the birds, as we know, the Torah instead gives a long, extensive list of the following are the ofos temeim. One of the ofos temeim is the ostrich, yana. Except that the Torah doesn't refer to it as the yana, kayeinim ba'midbar. The Torah refers to it as the basayana, the ostrich's daughter. Well, obviously, the ostrich's daughter is an ostrich. And so, what does that mean? Just say the yana. We have to say the Basayan. Somewhat similar, Mutatis Mutandi, to the how the Chazal have Ato Vincha and so forth, when the Torah forbids Melecha Shabbos both to you and your children. Well, your children are also you. The Torah is speaking to all Jews, not just the Jews who are alive at the time of Amar Sinai. So that, the Gemara explains, that may have to do with an Easter against having a katan do malacha on behalf of gadol. It's not an Israel for the katan, that's an issur for the gadol. Okay, but that was something that requires explanation. So I understand the same type of question, but a very different type of answer. Why did Torah forbid the basa yana? The basa yana is also a yana. So the Gemara is a drasha. This overall discussion is a Mishnah and Gemara in the first paragraph of Bechoros, as well as discussion towards the end of the third paragraph of Chulam. El Trefus is mostly about Trefus. The first two paragraphs of Chulam are mostly about Shechita. Elu Trefus, the third paragraph is mostly about Trefus. The name indicates. Towards the end of the paragraph, you have the sugyas of Minim Ksher and Minim Tmei. The Gemara there has a drasha. Basayana forbids not just a live bird, which is the daughter of a yana. Okay, that's a yana itself. No, the point is that an ostrich egg is also forbidden. And that's an example of the principle of kol yotze min ha'aser aser. If you have food items that emerge from the body of a non-kosher species, are also non-kosher. Milk of a behema tameh or a chaya tameh, eggs of an oaf tameh or a dog tameh. That is an issur d'oraisa. As Rama goes on to explain, anytime you have a species which is an issur lav, if I were to eat the flesh of an octopus, so that I'm chayv malchus, I violate a lav of dog tamer. If I eat the flesh of an ostrich, I violate oaf tamer. If I eat the flesh of a camel, so that's also a min tamer. So all those are the basar of those minim is a lav. So then there's an issur d'oraisa as well on consuming the milk of the mammals or the eggs of the non-mammals. Rama goes on to say, Halachavav, Perek Gimel Halachavav, Perek Gimel Halachavav, he opens with this din, the Yotzim and Asa Asa, the Chalav, the Beitzim, that's all a problem. The Magid Mishra right away tells you, look in the first paragraph of Bechoros, look in the end of the third paragraph of Chulin. And then Rama writes in Halachavav, there's no Malkus, because this is not the Lav. The Lav, Torah says, Lo Sochal, that's on the Besarhof, the Besar Hadag, the Basara Behemoth, the Basara Chayev. This is not the Chalav of the Behemoth, the Beitzim of the Oaf aren't the Basara Oaf or the Basara Behemoth, but it is an Issur D'oraisa. He has an interesting way of putting it. He says it's like eating Chatzi Shir. It's Asur Min HaTorah, you don't get Malkus. Chatzi Shir is Asur Min HaTorah, you don't get Malkus, because presumably, because it's based on a drasha. It's a din d'oraisa. That's an opening sug in the last parak of Masechus Yuma. The Chol of Yochanan and Shlokesh, where the Chatzis is Asmir and Torah, Asmir Rabbanon. Torah says, if I eat a kazayis of ostrich meat, I get malchus. How about if I eat half a kazayis, three quarters of a kazayis, a quarter of a kazayis? So I don't get malchus. You only get malchus if you have a shear. So what does that tell you? Rish Lakish says, oh, you don't get malchus, because now it's a d'oraisa. The whole is d'oraisa is only when you do a chil b'kazayis. If Yochanan says no, it's an issur d'oraisa, you don't get malchus unless you eat a full shear. Different ways of understanding that, but the simplest way of understanding that, is that you violated is a lamdusha chakira. But put simply, you had a davar aser, but not enough to get malchus. It wasn't the full aser. It was a partial violation of the Isser, because I didn't have a full achila. So the Rambam seems to be saying something similar over here as well, that if it's some sort of extension, it's a partial violation of the Isser, that's one way of looking at it, or it's a new Isser, new separate Isser, Yotzim and Asr Asr. Either way, it's not a lav, or it's not a full lav, it's a din based on a drasha. So it's an Isser d'oraisa, but not an Isra lav. A lav is when the Torah says, lo, ta'aseh, do not do. Here the Torah didn't say, do not do. The Torah has the added word, ba, sayana, which implies that this is also awesome. But this is, so you don't get malchus if you drink camel milk, but you do violate an Isra d'oraisa. It's also in the Torah to drink camel milk. So as a result, Chazal created an Isra d'rabanan. Nachri hands me a glass of milk, ostensibly cow's milk, ostensibly goat milk, So the Mishnah says here, Lamed Hei Beis, the very first item, Eilu Dvarim Shal Obdei Kachavim, or Eilu Dvarim Shal Nachrim Shal Doim, Lav Davka Obdei Kachavim. Asurim Ve'ini Surin Yisrana. The following are Asur Bachila Mutar. Another very first item before Pas, before Shemen, before Shlokos is Chalav Shechalavo Nachri Ve'ein Yisrael Ehu. Milk that was milked by a Nachri, and the Jew was not watching. There was no Jewish Mashgiach, as opposed to the contrast on the Lama Tesla Vez. Eil Mutarin Bachil, the following items are Hetzer Gamer, this is the third of the three Mishnais. Chalav Shechalavo Obed Kochav, the Yisrael Ehu. If you have a Jew watching, then it is Mutar. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara itself is fascinating, and then within the crevices, pun somewhat intended, the Rishonim find a lot to discuss. So we're not going to complete all of Chol Vakum tonight, obviously, just by looking at the length of the Ramah. So in Sifal, there's a lot going on. The Simen Kuf Tezvav, as you saw, there's three Seif, and the first is about Chalav, which is an Isra that appears here in Laman Ham Beis. The second Sif is about Gevina, which actually has its own Mishnah. Earlier, the Mishnah says that Gevinas Akum is Aser. Why it's Aser, the Mishnah itself already shrouds the rationale, the Tama Iser mystery. That's by the end of the Mishnah of Chavtes and Beis. The Mishnah has a discussion, which is rare, Shalak Matari, about the reason for Gevinas Akum. The Mishnah has a whole story, very, very fast, and we'll get to that. And then finally, the third of the three Sifim Kuf Tezvav is about Chemas Akum, about butter, other dairy products. So let's begin to get our feet wet in the world of Chalav Akum. We're going to see that Chalav Akum and Gevinas Akum are somewhat intertwined, and in the next couple of weeks, we'll have a chance to seek to really wrap our arms around the key issues in Simen Kuf Tezvav, Bli Neder. So let's begin. We'll begin Chalav tonight. So Chalav l'may neichoshla. The Gemara says, what's the concern? What are you worried about? Chazal forbade Chalav Akum. Why? So Avi Pashto said, well, you're worried. Chalav Chalev Yizim is kosher, and Chalev Paros is kosher, but Chalev Gamal is not. Gemara says, yeah, but l'may neichoshla, imishu mechlufe. If your concern is that you think that he's serving you, you think that he's selling you milk of a kosher species, and it's actually milk of a non-kosher species, what, you think that he's giving you, he's handing you a bottle of camel's milk and telling you that it's cow's milk? That's an unlikely concern. Tahar chiver tamei yarok. There's a difference in color. The milk of kosher species will tend to be whiter. The milk of non-kosher species tend to be yarok. I don't think that means green. I think that means yellow. In the language of Chazal, yarok is often used for both green and yellow. Now is not the time for it, but if you're interested, there's a monograph in the Wiley Library. There's a pair of anthropologists, if I don't know, it's been many years, a pair of anthropologists with a linguistic bent, studied color terminology in different languages, and what they found is fascinating. Across the globe, across different language families, what they found is there's a pretty consistent evolution of color differentiation as a culture develops increasingly refined words, as a culture develops. More and more words to define color. You know, the most primitive systems are invariably essentially black and white, light and dark. When there's a three color system, the third one is invariably red. And there's a four color system in many different languages. The fourth is invariably a yellow green. Meaning you're divided, that people see all colors, but how you divide that to Lasaber Saozen. You look at this Avraham Eger's Moshe. What color do you see? How many colors do you see?
Blue.
Blue, right? Well, blue, and as well as the gold, right? The blue. This is blue, and that's blue. And you could have made the argument that in certain sense this light blue might be closer to pink in certain senses than it is to the navy blue that's the rest of the cover. But we see those as blue because we speak language that has a category called blue. So you see those as both blue, different shades of blue, but they're distinct. So we see there's two variations of the same basic category of blue. It's because we speak a language that reflects and shapes a certain categorization, a certain mindset about color. So if you're part of a culture that has a three-color language, you see all sorts of different colors, but in your mind, they all fall into one of three categories: the whites, the blacks, and the reds. In a four-color language, it's the whites, the blacks, and the yellows, or the greens. Blue falls probably into the yellow-green also. And then what they discovered is if you speak a language which has anywhere between 5 and, I forget, maybe 16, 15, I think it was, colors, so then those next 11 will be, however many they are, will be drawn from a list of, here's a list of 11 colors that people are working off of. We see, for instance, we see brown. We see so many different things as brown, even though they're so different. We'll see the light brown as a brown, not an orange. We'll see that dark brown as a brown, not black. Brown, that category. The Aramaic of Demara tends to have 4 color terms. You have Chivra is white, Milchma is black, and then Sumach is red. I'm sorry? And Yarok is the green or yellow, or that zone. So that's, I believe, what the... this is not the only place where it comes up in Shas. Dama Yarok also. Dama Yarok in Masad Vini doesn't mean green blood. I mean, the presence of doctors in close to Newcastle, I'm pretty sure, present multiple doctors, I'm pretty sure that green blood is incredibly rare and a sign probably of some sort of severe pathology. Whereas a green secretion, whereas a yellowish, brownish secretion is probably what Chazal had in mind. And they said the yarok. And the stakes are even higher, obviously, in Taras Mishpacha, but it's the same category that Chazal are referencing here as well. Obviously, Chazal had finer differentiation about colors. So, for instance, going back to Masechas Nida for a moment, so there's a time I'm talking about different shades of red. They say red like this, and red like that, and red like this. The differentiation is there. We see those all as red, just like we see all these as blue. So, yarok presumably means it's yellow. I was not yet able to get some information from people in the dairy business to hear a little more about this. But the Gemara is assuming that there's a distinct color difference between kosher and non-kosher species. Just a little bit of reading online, it seems like there's a distinct color difference even between, let's say, cow's milk and goat milk. We don't see it because our milk is invariably very processed. It's pasteurized, it's homogenized. We don't see what raw cow milk looks like. Apparently raw cow milk is distinctly yellow. It varies a little bit by country. Butter color varies by country, and even milk color varies by country because of differences in the diets that dairy animals are fed. But here the Gemara says there's a very distinct difference in color between kosher and non-kosher species. So you can tell. There's no way to just hang it. Someone who... We live so far from the ground, but people who lived at a time when, people lived closer to the ground. Oh, you hand someone a glass of camel's milk, see right away. They'll see right away. So the Gemara says that would not be it's a dismissal or shchicha, that someone's going to fool you into thinking the camel's milk was cow's milk. It's a dismissal or shchicha. So Chazal wouldn't make exer for that. The Gemara says, maybe it's because of Iruve. To hand you a glass of pure camel's milk that you would pick up on. And maybe they'll adulterate the cow's milk with a little bit of camel's milk. Maybe it's less expensive. We saw that svara in the context of Kvashim Darvaz with the concern of an admixture of wine. Or maybe just you ran out. You ran out of cow's milk. The fellow wants a full gallon. So I'll take whatever I have as a filler. Maybe that was the issue. So that's also hard to understand. Nekum. Why not seek to make it into cheese? Damamar chalav tara omid chalav tamei enu omid. Non-kosher milk doesn't solidify, doesn't coagulate the way cheese does. Just a word about cheese. We'll get to Gvina more later on. Again, like you said, it's a separate gzeira job on Gvina sakum. But what the cheese making is that you're putting the milk through a process that causes a lot of the solids to coagulate, principally the protein, the fat, to coagulate, leaving behind a much thinner liquid. That's how you get curds and whey. And that's how you get soft cheese. And if you want to, you can process it further to turn the soft curds into some sort of hard cheese. The Gemara says that non-kosher milk does not curdle. That's what it sounds like. Kosher milk curdles, non-kosher milk won't curdle. So try making cheese and see what happens.
Isn't that a process?
What?
Can't
know. Good. What do we have in mind here? So the Gemara says, you're right. If you're buying milk from the Nachri because you want to make cheese, when you make the cheese, you'll see what happens to it. You don't want it for cheese. You want it, Rashi says, kamcha machl. You want to eat it. Kamcha is a milk-based sauce, like a kutach. It's interesting. The Gemara seems to assume that the two primary uses of milk are either as cheese, it seems like they thought of milk primarily as an ingredient. Either you're making it into cheese or you're making it into some other food. You're going to mix it in to a sauce.
Was it not safe to drink milk?
I don't know if it wasn't safe or just it wasn't as common. I'm not sure. But it's interesting, the Gemara's alternative to Gvina is Lakamcha, as opposed to just... They weren't pouring over their cereal, unless maybe cereal milk is a type of Kamcha. But they weren't drinking glasses of milk. At least it wasn't as common. So the Gemara says, in Harami, if you're going to make cheese... So then when you make the cheese, you'll see what you're dealing with. But if you're not planning to make cheese, that's exactly your point. I wasn't planning to make cheese. I was planning to just add it to a recipe. So Gemara says, okay. But why not Gemara to address it directly? Take a little bit. You weren't planning to make cheese. But take a little bit and put it on the side and see if you can cheese make. Getting cheese the way you want it, with the recipe and the flavor and the consistency that you want, can take time. Certainly, if you want to make a hard cheese, you want to age it, that's going to take time. But to just curdle into a very primitive type of cottage cheese, that's pretty quick. Especially if you add the right ingredients, that doesn't take that long.
When you say pretty quick, what do you mean by that? 5 minutes or 2 hours?
I don't think it's 2 hours. I believe it's a matter of minutes, so at least to get the beginning of curdling going. Again, it's not going to be something you'd be interested in eating, but if it's just a question of experimentation or a litmus test, it's okay. So you'll wait 20 minutes. So add what you need to add to get it to curdle, and then sit back and work on some other part of the recipe. And in 20 minutes, you'll know if the milk that the Nachri sold you is kosher or not. The Gemara says, well... It sounds like the Gemara is saying, if we could do an effective experiment, we would. Even when you have kosher milk and you're making cheese, but not everything curdles, there's gonna be liquid also. It's gonna be a mix of curds and whey. You don't turn your entire cup of milk into cheese. Some of it solidifies. Then you have the liquid that remains behind. So you're not going to be able to do an effective experiment. Rashi says, remember that the concern wasn't that he's handing you a glass of camel's milk. The concern was he handed you a glass of cow's milk with a little bit of camel's milk mixed in. So there's always going to be some liquid. This time there's a little more liquid. You can necessarily be able to tell the difference. It's not so cut and dried. No pun intended. The Ritva makes a point which probably has several nafkaminas, but I think also helps with this. The Ritva makes a comment here on Daf Lamed Hey, and he says, when the Gemara said initially that Tahar Omeid, Tame, Chalav Tame, Omeid, Chalav Tahar Omeid, Chalav Tame, Eino Omeid, that non-kosher milk doesn't curdle, the Ritva says it wasn't an absolute. This language. Ritva said, Masha Amru Chalav, the first piece of Lamed Hey and Beis. Masha Amru Tame, Eino Omeid, Lav De Eino Omeid, Klal. Doesn't mean it doesn't curdle at all. The chazina dekai, because it does. We see that it does. I doubt Ritva was personally making camel's milk cheese or pig's milk cheese, but they're probably the Spanish non-Jews among whom we lived. Some of them ate pig cheese. So we know that we know it's possible. El shirubo eino omid, shirubo nas in the sibin. It a little bit of it will curdle, but most of the liquid will remain liquid. So the Ritva is saying this to address the chush machesh. There is such a thing as curdling non-kosher milk. I think it also probably helps to understand the Gemara's hesitation about the experiment, because it's really going to be hard to determine whether there's a bit of non-kosher milk mixed in, if even the kosher milk produces a lot of curds but some whey, and the non-kosher milk produces mostly whey but also some curds. The difference between curdling 100% kosher milk and curdling 90% kosher and 10% non-kosher is going to be really minimal. It will be hard to tell just by doing the experiment. And then the Gemara says, "E bias ema, e bias ema." I feel came to kavaya lagrina. The Gemara says that another teretz. That's our girsa. Another teretz is even if you did want it for cheese making, it's still not testable because it could decay beni atfi. Because there's gonna be fluid inside the cheese. As Rashi points out, the first Lashon was assuming in a chanami, if you buy milk from the Nachri because you own a cheese factory, zintay. There's no problem chal vakum. Buy the milk and you'll see. Either it works, it doesn't work. If it works, it works. But the first Lashon held the issue of chal vakum was because it was for the people who are buying it to drink, or people buying it to mix into to sauce, whatever it is, not to cheese making. The second mahalach in the Gemara says no, even cheese making you can't tell. Why can't you tell? Because there's always going to be some liquid. Maybe there's some liquid inside. What changed? We knew initially also that curdling isn't 100%. So what was the difference? Think about it, a subtle logical leap. You know, why is it all of a sudden now talking about the liquid that's stuck beni atfi inside the cheese?
Even if it does curdle all the way, there's still going to be.
Good. Because, again, this may not work as much according to Ritva. The simple reading of the Gemara before was that all of the chalav tameh remains liquid. If you're actually making, so that's a more of a concern if you're trying to do a test. And we do a test to know what's the deal with the rest of it. So some will curdle, some won't curdle, I won't know what the story is. But if I'm actually making cheese, sounds like the first lashon held. I'm actually making cheese, so what's the problem? It'll curdle. And I'll only eat the curds. Gishmak. So if there's any chalav tameh that's mixed in with the whey, I'm going to throw that out anyways. Now the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, but even the curds themselves will have liquid within. There may be holes, spaces, cavities inside the cheese where there's liquid that's caught. So you're not going to, you may drain out of it. If there's liquid on the outside, that'll drain out. But there'll be liquid within the cheese itself. And that liquid may have a mixture maybe a mixture of kosher whey and non-kosher milk. So the Gemara says that is a problem. So that's how Halacha L'maaseh, the Gemara says. Mishnah says Chazal forbade. Chazal forbade challah vacuum. Why? Because of a concern that maybe it's a mixture of kosher and non-kosher milk, and there's no way to effectively test for it. Even if you're going to make it into cheese, the Gemara's second lashon is that's still a problem. So what's the solution? The solution is not. To test it. So what can I do? One thing I could do is don't get a chalavach, get a chalavach Israel. Meaning, so buy your own cow, buy your own goat, milk your own milk. That's one solution. But the Mishnah already indicates it's not chalavachim, it's chalavachim, the ein yisrael ro'ehu. That's built in, it's interesting, built into the language of the Isser. It's so fascinating because we spend, how many weeks do we spend? Weeks and weeks and weeks on bishalachim. And the Mishnah was one word, shlachos. The Mishnah gave us nothing to go on, just something that's cooked. And here, the Mishnah didn't say chalav, it said chalav shechalav ha'akum ve'ein yisrael ro'ein. Not only did the Mishnah already tell you that it's only us because Yisrael doesn't see it, the Mishnah goes weiter, lama tesim ve'ein. In case it didn't get the point, the Mishnah says, what's mutter? Chalav shechalav ha'akum ve'yisrael ro'ein. If the Jew is watching, says that it's mutter, which itself is intriguing that we needed to repeat it. We needed to repeat it. So the and you saw there the Gemara says, yeah.
Isn't the Mishnah famous for being very economical with words?
Yes, yes. So you would have expected that we don't need to repeat this. The Gemara does point out on Lava Tesson, based on that next Mishnah, that that the question of how much does the Jew see, that's an interesting question. How much Hashgacha do you need? How much Hashgacha do you need? So what does the Gemara say? Well, the Mishnah just said, Yisrael Re'ehu. And the Mishnah indicate Mirami, it's what the Brisa says, Beferish, if a Tosefta is expanded. But the Gemara says, the Tosefta is just expanding what the Mishnah said, that the Gemara, what does the Gemara say? The Jew is sitting there alongside the non-Jews' herd, and that's good enough. That's good enough. That's good enough. What do you mean? I mean, so the Gemara explains, a simple reading in the Mishnah is that here's a cow, here's a goat, and I have Christopher is milking the goat, and I'm watching. I'm watching the goat. So the Gemara says the Tosefta doesn't agree. Tosefta says, I don't have to directly watch it. There's a whole herd of animals, and Christopher is inside the whole herd, and here you have this Mashkiach who's outside the herd, and Christopher goes and he milks an animal and comes back with a bucket of milk. And I say, thank you very much. I paid him for the milk and I woke up. I don't have to actually watch it. And intriguingly, the Gemara says, that's exactly what the Mishnah said. Tanila tarabanan. Tanila tarabanan. And maybe Lovei Nachoshesh. The Yisrael is just Bitsad HaEder. He's not inside the herd with the Nachri, watching the Nachri directly milking. There's a lot going on. I have to read the language here carefully. Read the language of the Gemara carefully, and we'll start to unpack some of the issues. Hey, Chidami. So what's the case? The Gemara says, I understand. What's the composition of the non-Jews' herd, the non-Jews' eder? If all the animals are goats and sheep and cows, so of course it's mutter. What else do you need to see? And if it is this, and it could have a time of edro, and if in this herd of 150 animals, so they're mostly goats and cows, but they're a handful of pigs mixed in, so then why is that mutter? How am I? I understand. So you saw him go into the herd, and he comes out with a bucket of milk. So how do you know what animal he milked? Maybe you milked the goat, or maybe you milked the pig. How are you supposed to know? Or again, going back to Lavan, hey, we're not concerned that he milked the pig and hands me a bucket of pig's milk, but maybe he milked the goat and then squirted some pig's milk and also. Maybe it's a mix. He was milking a goat, he wasn't producing enough today, so he supplemented. Who knows? That's the whole issue. Well, what does it help the year outside? What does the Gemara say? The olam dika davar tamer. It must be that there is a davar tamer. It must be that it is a mix. It's a mix. So what is it? There are non-kosher animals in there. You're standing outside the barn, but there are non-kosher animals in the barn. The answer is, it's not a barn. It's an open air. You're sitting. Yisrael is yoshev b'tzad edroshal akam davki yoshev. V'chi koi chazi leh. If you would stand up, these aren't bison. They're little goats. So you're taller than the goats. Same thing, you scared the mosquito, you scared the spider, but who's bigger than the spider? Who's bigger than the goat? You're taller than the goats. So if you're sitting, you're not going to see over the goats. If you're sitting, you're not going to see over the cows. If you stand up, you can see. It's only because you're sitting that you can't see. If you were to stand, you could see exactly what Christopher is doing. When you sit, when you're sitting, you can't see. You're not taller than, you're not significantly taller than the goats when you're sitting. So now the same became with I might have thought that since you don't see when you're sitting, so you have no idea what's going on, maybe while you're not looking, the nachri is mixing in non-kosher. Well, k'mashlan kem ki koi chazile, you're two same mirtzes on mirvbe. The fact that you could stand up at any moment, is enough to solve your problem. Mirtas. The fact that nachri is would be concerned if he knows that if he starts milking the pig and you, at that moment you happen to stand up, he just lost your business. He'll be caught. So that is that's enough to solve the problem. That's enough to solve the problem. That's enough to solve the problem. Yeah. Tosfos says, I don't understand, this is against the Mishnah. Tanil HaTan Rabbanan, Tema HaTan HaSizim Yisrael Raweyu, the Jews wa season. Mashmah Allah Chazileh Kol Shaita Aser. If he doesn't see you, it's garnished. So isn't this price not only the same, not the same as our Mishnah, isn't this price directly against the Mishnah? The Tosfos says, no. What the Gemara teaches you, what this Tosefta teaches you, is... what the Tosefta teaches you is Ro'ehu Lav Dafka. Alarotso Lomar, Yachal Arotso. That's what the Mishnah meant. If I wasn't meant to bring the Mishnah my own, I would throw yes to Mamash Watch. Tosefta teaches me now. Tosefta Rosh points out, well, as the Gemara said, that would be the Dabar Pasha. The Gemara has one kasha pshita. Let's keep it clear. The Gemara has one kasha pshita. That was if there's no davar tamei, it's pashit that you don't have to actually watch. So as Rosh's point that there's a different implied kasha pshita, which is Yisrael or Ehu Mamish. Of course that's mutter. How do you know? Of course that's mutter. Maybe Chazal. Well, of course that's mutter. Maybe Chazal said Chavakim is aser lo plug. Oh, Chavakim is aser. So the answer is no. Why is that pshita? That's because here he doesn't say beverish, but here he's poking on that issue. The Mishnah told me a lot of hey. The Mishnah didn't say chal of azaster. The Mishnah said chal of azaster when any Yisrael Re'eu. So I know that if Yisrael Re'eu was mutter, it could be medayik in the previous Mishnah. What did it say here? Oh, so now that you put the piece together, what it means is that the Brice is really, although the guard didn't say beverish, the Brice is really solving the unspoken kasha that, as you point, David, normally the girl would have asked beferish. You know, what's the trichasa in this Mishnah? So the answer is, the trichasa lahor, if you plug the Tosa Rosh back in Tosefta, back in the Mishnah, the trichasa is, the Yisrael Mishnah Amehem Bezal Atoy Yid Hashkacha Tanidis Mamish. You see, you don't need to, the Kamash Malah, the remez of the Mishnah on Lama Tess and the Beferisha Brisa Tosefta, the Gemara calls Lama Tess, is you don't need Hashkacha Tanidis Amilk. Well, you Yotze V'nechna is totally fine. There's a Mirtas, if there's enough, there's a capacity for you to see, is enough that at any moment he's worried, you may pick up your head and see, that is sufficient. That's what Yisrael or Ehu means. Yisrael or Ehu means Yisrael Yachal. Yisrael is Yachal Arosa. That's the Sef, the Tosa Rosh expands on this Tosa. See, Tosa Rosh here, Lama Tess on this. Okay, so what do we have? So let's encapsulate what we have so far, and then let's point out some directions to go in for next time. So we have this is the rice of chalev behemah tameir and chalev chaya tameir. That's the rice, no malchus, but an isur rice. We have built upon that an isur drabanan of. Chalav Akum, which is being presented to me as kosher. Presented to me as kosher, but I can't rely on the Nachman's word. I have to have some sort of hashkacha. I have to directly ascertain that this is kosher milk, either through direct observation or at least a mirtas that comes from my ability to peek at any moment. I could. I'm not standing. I can't actually see the chaliva, but I'm in a position where at any moment I could stand up. See the Khalifa. So that's enough to be. That's a sufficient hashkacha. Yisrael ro'eu or Yisrael yachalarosa. That's enough. But short of that, not. Why? Not because of a concern that it's pure chalav tame. Pure chalav tame is aser, but it's unlikely that you would confuse if we knew enough about milk. It would be unlikely that we would confuse pure chalav tame with pure chalav tar. That's a rare chash chazal. It wouldn't be grounds for chazal to make it as drabanan. What is grounds for chazal to make this drabanan is a iaruvet. Maybe what's being presented to me, a pure chalav tahar, is really a blend of chalav tahar and chalav tameh. And you remember again, the Gemara had said, the Gemara had seemed to have two approaches. It sounds like it was a machlokas. In the Gemara Lamehav Beis, is that only a concern when I'm buying the milk and don't plan to make cheese with it? Or is it even a concern when I'm buying the milk and I do plan to make cheese with it? That was our girsa, that's in Ibad Seima, and that's the way Rashi had said, according to that first Lashon. So in the Hanami, if I get milk to the Nachri to make cheese, so there's no concern of Halakim. Halakim is a concern if I get milk to the Nachri to make chocolate milk. Get milk to the Nachri, make salad dressing. I get milk for nachri to pour over my cereal. I get milk for nachri to make ice cream. Then it's a concern. The second washer says, no, even for gvina there is a concern. Even for gvina there is a concern. So there are a couple of interesting questions. First, I just mentioned one sort of separate independent issue, and then we'll get back to the heart of the matter. In terms of the sort of like the sugya lama tesan beis and sugya lama hanan beis. Sugya lama tesan beis, as soon as Yisrael chalakim, you know, what's the definition of Yisrael ro'ehu that's going to be matir? The studies are interconnected, but in terms of the sort of specifics of that, so let's say one issue that Ritva already raises and others raise that pops up in the Ramayir is who qualifies as a Mashkiach? You have to be a Bar Mitzvah, can you be under Bar Mitzvah, do you have to be even older than just Bar Mitzvah, you have to be an adult, which is at least in part a practical matter of who creates the Mirtas. Who's maybe the Ritva says that The Ritva says that the katan is insufficient. The Ritva says the katan is insufficient. They're back and forth. Others disagree. In terms of the core, in terms of the core issue of Chalav Akum, and the Chazal forbade Chalav Akum because of a chashash of the Eruv Chalav Tamu. And that the Gemara seems to have a debate, according to our Girsa, as to whether that's only the case when you're buying lekamcha, or is the case, even when you're buying legvina, there's still a concern maybe some chalav tamei got stuck inside. That's, in other words, according to Rashi, according to our girsa, the way Rashi explains it, if the first lashon holds in a chanami, sometimes chalav akum is mutter. It doesn't have to be chalav akum is shalav. Seems like the it sounds like the first gear says buy challah for gvina making, maybe it's mutter. Maybe that will be mutter. That's what the Gemara seems to be. Certainly the way Rashi understands that. What was the language of Rashi again? Avalagvina sakadaita chashu de mutter. Right now, we think that if you buy legvina, it's gonna taka be mutter. Not that the nachri is making gvina, that I'm making gvina. I'm gonna buy it. That's a whole separate discussion post that. I got it. We mentioned one of the discussion about what's the mipnei ma, the mission of the Gemara discussion. What was the tama iser for gvina? So it's likely that Gevina is not a concern of Chalav Akum. Why not? Obviously, Gevina is not going to have Chalav Akum. So then maybe, because the Nachrami, they only forbade it if I'm gaining from the Nachri in the state of milk. Okay, if I get the Nachri state of cheese, they didn't impose the Isser of Chalav Akum. But if I get in the state of milk, so it sounds like the way our Gemara reads, and Rashi points this out, and Hamid Beis, it sounds like the Gemara at least entertains a possibility that it should depend on what I intend for. Just because I got it from in the state of milk doesn't mean it's the same mutter. Awesome. If I'm going to make it cheese, it's okay. I'm not going to make the cheese. I'll never experiment, so then it's awesome. If I were to experiment, that's the Gemara's first lashon. If I were to experiment, so then it would be mutter. And the second lashon says, you can't really experiment effectively. Because who knows what's stuck inside. Who knows what's stuck inside? If you look at the Rif, the Rosh quotes this, but it's really the Girsas of Rif. I want to take a look at something intriguing and suggest it. Take a look at the Girsas of the Rif. Yudal min alf bedapi rif. Right after the Mishnah, he gives it the Gemara, chalv l'maynechosh lei, mishim chalufe, white versus yellow, iruve, nimsi. He says, why not make a nisui? Why not experiment? And he says, oh, yeah, if you're going to make it to cheese in a chanami, you could experiment. But if you make hachmayaskin, we're talking a case where you're not planning to make into cheese. I make nishkel minekali venukim. Why not take a little bit, a sample? Well, the Gemara says no. Kevin de Batar, nami ikan nesubi de chalbud lo kaimi. Lekal nekal milsa. It's not really something you can determine through experimentation. And notice the next words. Rather than saying ibazema, he says hashdas lachi gvina nami da da da. Now that we recognize that the experiments don't really work well, the same is true for Gavin as well. In other words, it's not a machlokas. It's not a machlokas. And the Ran on the side stresses that it's not, according to the Girsa Sariv, Chazal never built in a situation where it's mutter because it's determinable. Chalav ve'ezra re'eu is awesome. Gears is Rashi. Rashi's understanding of that gears indicates no. Rashi's understanding is that there could be cases. There could be, at least there is a shita that there's a case where it's mutter because it's experimental. It's not an absolute issur. This is potentially a machlok is whether the issur of chalavakum is the issur below plugina. And that's going to open a whole world. This is what we're going to pick up with Mitzvah next time. This is a rich machlokas. Maybe let's take a look at one final Maramakim for tonight. Not only because it has fascinating geography. I don't know if you saw it. Let's end with the Mordechai. The Mordechai in Tav Chavav. Beis Yosef sent it to you. I put the Maramakim. The Beis Yosef quotes a little bit differently. We have in front of other footnotes in the new tour point out that the Beis Yosef's quote is somewhat different than our version of the Mordechai. One of the differences is there's a fantastic place name that appears in the Mordechai if you saw it. If you're interested in medieval English literature, it's a place name that should ring a bell. Huh? Where is this? It's on the Lamatasogya. In the middle of Tav Chavav, 82, the bottom of the first column on 82, Mem Aleph Amud Gimel, at the Daf Lamed Tes on the base. Yigalak Adar V'Tamei Be'Edro Pshita, no Adar V'Tamei, so of course what? There's no Adar V'Tamei, so of course. And that's what Gemara said. The Brisa, Tosefta says, Yoshev Yisrael B'Tzad Edro. You don't have to actually watch. You could just be sitting along the outside of the herd. That's sufficient. So Gemara said, well, what's this scenario? Are there any non-kosher animals in the herd or not? No non-kosher animals in the herd. Avad is mutter. Pshita. So the Mordechai raises the following issue, which he presents as a machlok as we showed him. He does not name the first group. He rejects them and then names the second group. Yesh mochichin mikan di imbaru lanu she'en behema temeya be'edro de mutter lika chal me'oso akam. If you know that a particular non-Jewish farmer owns no non-kosher animals, the only mammals he owns are kosher mammals, then you can buy his milk. I feel any sorrow, even if there's no Jew watching. Some say, look, isn't that what the Gemara said? If there's no Dover time for Edrob Shita, the Mordechai says, Chas v'shalom, that's a mistake. How does he know? We said pshita. Pshita means what? It's obvious that what the Brisa said is true. The Brisa's din is trivial. What was the Brisa's din? Not that's mutter. That's mutter with this type of hashgacha. That's, I think, the nuance of the Mordechai is saying. If you don't need any hashkacha when Elo Dever Tom Be'edro, you shouldn't have said pshita. Should have said, what the Brisa said is wrong. You don't even need so much. Not what the Brisa said is obviously true. You should have said what the Brisa said is excessive. You don't even need to be beside an aid there. Stay home. Don't go visit the farm. Just meet him at the market. So that's what the Mordechai says. He thinks it's a poor diuk. Elohachi Perusho. Sagi. Oh. See, he's there. That's the chiluk. He's presenting machlokas, and we're showing him if a non-Jewish farmer who has no treif mammals, do I have to do any hashgacha or none? Do I have to do the same hashgacha? Right? Yosha b'tzad ha'eder is good enough, even when Yesh lo davar tam v'edro. And the Mardukhai says it's also necessary, even if ain't lo davar tam v'edro. That's what he quotes from whom, by the way? Mishum Rav Binyamin of Canterbury. As in Canterbury Tales. Canterbury, I assume, is Canterbury. You know, Canterbury. He must have been one of the British Baliatosis. Like we had in the previous circuit, a Sheikhar, the Eretz Ha'i. Have you heard about the approach to the British Baliatosis? Here's another one. So here goes. Rav Binyamin of Canterbury, as well as Rav Binyamin of Peretz, was a more well-known... one of the Chachmi Ashkenaz, the smock, if you're in there time, you have to be there. You gotta be there. And he explained, the man Peretz explains, there's still a concern, Penya Arev, Penya Yosim, Ha'akim, Chal, Tan, Vekli, Kodim Shabbat Yisrael, Kedela Harkin Hamida. There is a concern that maybe he did introduce some Chal of Tamim. Rabbi Peretz is raising a number of issues which we're going to pick up with Bluna next time. He already mentioned the issue of you notice he threw it at the end. Maybe he put trays of milk in the bucket before he even started milking. That already raises a question that we'll get to. Is it enough to watch the Nachri milk, or do you have to inspect the bucket? Interesting. But coming back to the core issue, aside from that footnote that he raises about what's in the bucket before he even got started, so we seem to have machlokas the yesh mochichen, the yesh omer, versus Rabbi Yamin of Canterbury and Rabbi Peretz in terms of when you know that the Nachri doesn't own any trade for mammals, is there still a din of Yisrael Roeh? What does it sound like a machlokas about? Sounds like a low plug issue. That sounds like a similar issue. I know there's no concern. I know there's he doesn't own any dove or tummy. He doesn't own any dove or tummy. That's what it sounds like. On the other hand, that's an important point. On the other hand, well, there is a chashash. Well, where is this milk coming from, by the way? Maybe he put in some non-kosher. Where do you get non-kosher milk from?
Gone out and gotten it.
Right, so he doesn't own any pigs, but Farmer Chris doesn't own any pigs, but Farmer Bob does. So maybe Farmer Chris got some pigs milk from Farmer Bob. That's already some more of a distant concern, but there still is some room for concern.
Isn't there also a distinction whether if he stands up he could see? Meaning is the opinion that Mordechai is quoting now, does he just have to be outside? Does he also have to be what the Gemara said, when he stands up, he could see, when he's sitting, he can't see?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or is he just saying, as long as somebody's outside, whether he could see or not, even while standing?
Yeah, Alpi Pashtus, it means the same thing. He's talking about Yoshua B'tzad Ha'eder, Alpi Pashtus. We're going to see, we'll see Mirtzim next time. The Ramah starts to quote, well, maybe you can have less Hashgacha. You show up in the middle. You have to figure that. The simple reading of the Mordechai is that it's the same. It's all the same. So again, the simple reading of the Mordechai is they have a machlokas whether the din of Chal of Yisrael is a low plug or not. That's the simplest reading of the Mordechai before you start digging into detail. I should mention in terms of who disagrees, who's the first day, so the Magid Mishnah on the Rambam, but the Rambam held that way or not is a matter of some dispute. The Magid Mishnah seems to be a makel. He says,
"Magid Mishnah is the Yesh Malchichah."
Maybe. Vaday Chayshin Kol Sheyesh Tamei BeEdro. The Magid Mishnah in Parag Gimel Halach Yedzayin. Sounds like he's saying if there's no time BeEdro, then there's no need for Yisrael. Even Yoshu B'tzad Ha'edim. So it's again the simplest reading, looking at the Mardechai, that the Mardechai is presenting a machlokas whether the need for Yisrael Arei or the Easter of Chav Nachri even applies when there really isn't a concern. Or at the very least, when there's a more minimal concern. And a parent says, I'm worried because maybe, maybe, maybe. But clearly, it ain't no Darbatan Vedro. It seems like there's a far more reduced concern, the aura. So this is going to give rise to more direct machlokas. Achronim, Prichadash, the Chasm Sofer are going to start to get involved in this. However, other cases of low plug, other cases of the Chashash is really severely reduced. So what's the story? Let's say there are no non-kosher mammals raised by farmers. Yeah, it's not just like Farmer Chris. Okay, every farmer has this. Farmer Chris is not interested in raising pigs. Okay, but you know, there are five other farmers in the area that do raise pigs. How about the whole, and no one's raising pigs around here. Or no one in the whole society, no one drinks pig's milk. Who's interested in pig's milk? So what if it's a broader, so that's going to require, so that's going to become an interesting discussion, the pre-charge, some sort of start to get involved in that. And that in turn is going to be a part of the discussion about Bizman Azeh, the last century or so, that you have governmental regulation. So we're going to see two different achronim addresses. Moshe Feinstein is more famous for addressing it. What's intriguing, though, is that the Chazon Ish is one who addresses it more aggressively. Moshe has a series of three tshuvas, beginning with, I think it's a Siman Mem Zayin, Yerodei Chelok Aleph, where he addresses it. And then there was a fellow, Rabbi Yehuda Dick, who wrote a shaila to him about drinking commercial milk, Chalav Company, without the direct, no mashkiach. And it's this interesting series of three tshuvas. He writes a tshuva, and then he writes another one, and the third, there's a back and forth. This is where Adik wrote back to him, and Adik wrote back to him again. I think one tshuva is from Sivan, one tshuva is from Tammuz, and one tshuva is from El, if I remember correctly. There's a lot of back and kept pushing. Why would he make? How about this? How about that? How about this? How about that? There's interesting chilufim mechtavim. So Rav Moshe is the one who's famous for assuming that it's mutter, but he every time he writes it's mutter, but bal nefesh yachmi keeps chazron of the same piece. Well, I'm convinced it's meyutho. It's asin. I'm convinced it's mutter. It carries your kasha. This and that and this and that. But bal nefesh yachmi. And as I wrote you in the last letter, I wrote the last time, but not for Jacob. Chaznish just says, doesn't see the problems. It's intriguing that the people call Rav Moshe, I'm not really sure why. People call Rav Moshe, not the Chaznish. Chaznish is much more strong about it.
Rav Moshe doesn't even say why he's Machmir, right?
Yeah, that's also part of that. We'll have to dig into it a little bit. But next time, hopefully, we'll get to discuss. Next time, I want to discuss the Prichadash and the Chasam Sofer, see how they analyze this Mordechai, sort of unpack that some more, and then see where that leads the Chazon Ish and Moshe Feinstein in terms of Bizman Hazeh. It's interesting. Rav Moshe, we'll hopefully have a chance to look. Rav Moshe develops a whole concept about Yediyah and Re'iyah. Spends most of the tshuva talking about chasagis. And then he says, oh, it's based on what I said. Of course, this is mutter. With or without the frichadosh. And then he throws in the bal nefesh yachmi. Yeah, so why he says that is mysterious. Why he said, and he keeps chazrin over. I'm convinced it's mutter and bal nefesh yachmi. Mutter, bal nefesh yachmi. So as I said, when I got started, we were able to lay out a lot of the key issues. And Bli Neder next week. I think we're set to get together next week, Wednesday night, if I remember correctly. So Bli Neder next week, we can wrap up Chalup, and then beyond that, get into Gvinim Chana. That's a show.